I am ridiculously passionate about biblical respect and Christian women understanding it and applying it and then reaping the benefits in their lives. It's I've seen this in my own life and then in the lives of those around me, and it really is unbelievable what can change in your life. It was about 6 years ago. I was 6 months pregnant with Maggie, and I was visiting my parents down in California. And my mom had been telling me, oh, we're reading this book in our Bible study. It's so good. And I was like, oh, what's it about? And she said, respect. And I was like, okay. And she's like, it's really good. You have to read it. And I was like, okay. So to me, respect was just kind of an old-fashioned, vague term that basically meant submission. So I thought, well, why does she think I need to read that? I'm submitting. I don't know. All right, I'll read it. So she hands me this book when I get there, and I thought, well, that's a different cover. There's this woman, and I still don't know what she's holding. It's like a fish or a piece of leather. I don't know what it is, but it's an interesting cover, and I thought, well, that's okay, I'll read this, I guess. So I started reading it, and everyone had gone to bed. I think it was about 10 o'clock when I started reading it, and the first couple chapters, I was like, oh, this is good. And I'd known a little bit about the author and her husband before, so I was kind of acquainted with them anyway, and I thought, this is good Wilson material. Then I get to the third chapter, and I read this sentence, and it literally stopped me dead in my tracks. She starts off first with, it says, respect makes a difference, and then she has Ephesians 5:33, let the wife see that she respects her husband. And then this is the sentence, sometimes I wonder where the church would be today if the men in it were respected as they ought to be by their wives. I'm choking up. That, I was like, at first, actually, I was a little bit irritated. I was like, well, what does that mean? Where would they be? Well, they should be there anyway. I don't need to do something about that. They should be doing whatever they need to do. So then I was like, well, what does she mean? What does respect do? I don't know what it does. I thought I was doing it. I thought it was just submission. So I continued reading. I think I was up actually reading this book until about 3 a.m. It's not all about respect, but I could not put it down, and have probably read it at least a couple times a year since then. Probably more like 3 or 4 times a year. It is almost everything I'm going to say is from her writings, either this book or some articles that she's written since then. But so I'm very thankful to her for all of her work, and I hope that you will be also. This book is invaluable. I suggest that if I haven't already given it to you, because I know I've given it to a lot of people, if I haven't given it to you, you should get a copy yourself. It's great. And she's much better at saying this than I am. Oh, I'm sorry. The Fruit of Her Hands, Nancy Wilson. It's actually, and if you read the book, the more you read it, you'll notice it's actually a little bit disjointed. It's kind of weird as a book. It's because it's a series of articles that she wrote for, her husband has a publication. It's like a quarterly journal, and she writes the women's section. So that's why it's a little bit disjointed sometimes. Anyway, I'm so excited that every single one of you is here tonight. God brought each of us here for his purposes, and I don't want anyone to feel like this does not apply to them. So for the married women, we kind of all fall into a couple general categories. For the married women, the application is going to be pretty obvious because it's about, most of this is about respecting your husband. So I hope that you won't struggle too much to figure out what you can do. To the women who are widows, don't think that you're off the hook here. We have, you have Titus 2 resting on you in a very serious way. And those of us that are younger and don't know what we're doing and don't have the experience that you have had need that input in our lives. And you also have a different perspective that, somebody who has a live husband right next to them doing annoying things may not have. You have a more thankful perspective. A little distance is good sometimes. It's hard when you're right with the person to recognize how much you have. Sometimes it's easy to take it for granted. And then for the single girls, I know there's actually not that many of you here, but I am the most excited for you because you guys have the biggest opportunity. I wish I had learned this before I got married. I wish that I had had a little bit of this under my belt, because when you have to apply it with another sinner who's right there, who you're not related to, it's a little tricky. It's your sin is just constantly pushed right into your face, and your pride is, it gets crushed, which is good. But I do think that it would be easier if you practiced with your dad and got really good at it in that circumstance before you get married. The other advantage that you have is you are not yet married to somebody that you shouldn't be married to. One article that Nancy Wilson wrote is excellent about choosing a husband. It's easy for women to fall in love and to get into an emotional fog and not be able to tell what they're looking at and, you know, oh, I love him, he's whatever, you know, and then you start asking questions about his character. Well, he's working on that, but you don't understand, I really love him. He's really nice and handsome or whatever. Falling in love is not something that we usually have difficulty with, but respecting a man is different, and your path will be so much easier if you marry a man who is easy for you to respect. And that's different for different women because some of respect is personal. It's a different person is respected in a different way. So I urge you to be careful. I could do 3 hours just on that topic, so we're going to move on from that. But you probably have the most benefits of anybody in the room. And then for everybody, this respect is something that Christians need, all Christians, men and women, need to be applying in their lives. It's not just for wives to their husbands, but we're to treat all authority that we encounter with respect. So that's really good. And then we're all discipling. And some of us have kids, and this is huge. There are no children too young to learn about respect. Maggie has been hearing about it since we've been talking to her. So she definitely doesn't understand, you know, all of the finer elements at 5 years old, but she does know that we talk to Dada in a very special way that we don't talk to everyone else. That she talks to her friends in one way. She talks to her dad in a different way. She understands that different things that he does with her are a privilege, and she views them that way and is very thankful for them. It's not the same as just playing with a friend when he gets down on the floor and is wrestling with her. That is a privilege that she needs to show gratitude and thankfulness for, because he is someone for her to look up to. So you guys can be teaching your girls that in particular. Another thing that I did want to mention is that this is going to be a jet tour through biblical respect. Sean and my dad were helping me prepare this, and they told me to do an information dump, just put everything down on paper or in the computer that I could possibly think of that I would want to say, and then we would go from there. And I was like, okay. So I went and I did all that, and I ended up with 241 talking points. Talking points, not 241 things to say, just like things that would get me to get going on a topic. And when they saw that, they were like, oh, no, this is way too much. You have to cut out like 80% of this. And I was like, okay. So I edited out tons. I think that would probably work out to maybe 13, 14, 15 hours of material. So, and Debbie did say that I could talk as long as I wanted, but I don't think I'm going to be able to go that long. So a deep understanding of respect covers so many aspects of Christian living, theology, and culture that I won't even be able to mention. So I just hope that tonight sparks your interest, and then you go and ask questions and study and pursue this on your own, because I'm assuming it's endless because I'm nowhere near done studying it. So we really are just going to be kind of skimming over the surface. So if you feel like I'm going too fast, I'm sorry. Just hold on. There's a lot to get through. Okay, well, first, the key part, because where my misunderstanding started was I had the wrong definition of respect. And the definition is key. If you don't lay the right foundation of the definition and then you start building a house of application, it's going to get all crazy. The higher up you get, the crazier it's going to get, especially when you get to issues of that are really tricky, where you're dealing with respecting a husband who's in sin. If your definition is not right at the beginning, you will have no idea what to do when you get to those parts. And the wrong definitions are everywhere. Okay, so I looked around for a dictionary definition also. And the one that I thought was good was to feel or show honor or esteem for, consider or treat with deference or courtesy, to show consideration for. Some synonyms and related words are admire, esteem, regard, think highly of, look up to, deference, honor, hold in high regard, and revere. This is really, for me, when I started reading all of those kinds of words, I thought, I definitely don't know what respect is. I'm not doing this right at all. I was, you know, submitting in the sense that, you know, it's embarrassing to talk about how bad I was at it, but I thought, you know, I'm going to talk it out with him. I'm going to say everything that I think about what we should do. And then when he tells me what to do, I'll say, okay, and then I'll do it. But I am going to let him know, you know, this is, well, I think this, and da, 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 da. You know, I grew up in a house definitely being encouraged to talk and participate, and Sean does the same, but I definitely was overstepping my bounds. I'm sure that I still do sometimes presume much too much on my husband's grace instead of looking at him as the biblical head that he is. So when I started hearing these words, I mean, like, revere, that's a serious word. That's not, you know, just, hey, you're okay with me. That's a very weighty kind of word. So, okay, then usually the next question is but I thought respect was a feeling. Isn't it a feeling? What do you mean? Is it an action or is it a feeling? And after lots of study on this, especially preparing for this, because I was asked a few questions before I did this, I would say that it's both. In Ephesians 5:33, and you can turn there, this is kind of the basis of what we're doing. It's very short, but gives a direction to the husband. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. If we're told to see that we do something, I think that it's questionable that that's just a feeling. That would be unusual to be told just to, you know, stir up a feeling in yourself without any sort of action. I don't even know how you would do that. So it seems to be a feeling and an action. So this, depending on what your husband is like, you'll have either one or both, a different combination of these things. If you are married to a disreputable man, he must still be respected, even though you won't have those feelings, more than likely. If he is just a foolish man who doesn't love God, isn't pursuing the right things, makes mistakes all the time, and is only concerned about himself, that is something that's not going to just create feelings of respect in you. But you are still called to respect him. It doesn't say, let the wife see to it that she respects her husband if he's respectable. It says that she needs to respect him. So in this case, I like Nancy Wilson's husband, Doug Wilson, says it's saluting the uniform. You need to salute the uniform. You need to realize that even though the person inside the uniform may not be qualified for the job, may be doing a horrible job filling that slot, might not be qualified in any way, he's still wearing the uniform. And in this case, it's different than the military. Actually, I guess the military would be the same. But for us, we know that God put that personal man in that uniform for you. So that's what you have to recognize and then take action on. So even if you don't feel like you respect him, you still have to do that. That's difficult, but there are some also some other situations that are even more difficult than just a husband who is foolish. So we'll address those at the end. However, if you have, like me, a respectable husband, one whose person matches this calling, you will probably have a lot of respectful feelings. And that is the case for me now. It's not just enough, though, to have the feelings and just sit around there thinking, oh, wow, my husband's really cool. Look at him. Wow, everyone says he's cool, too. And look at, he does all this so well, and he really is pursuing God. But you actually need to act on it and show him that respect that you're feeling. And then there's a third category, and I think that a lot of us fall into this. This is for sure where I was. Many times, if you're not feeling respect in your heart, it's not actually that there's something wrong with your husband. It's that there's something wrong with your heart. And this was the part that was so convicting to me as I started studying this. Many times we are discontent, grumbling, and unthankful. And that taints how we see our husbands. It taints how we see all of our circumstances. When you are not thankful, you get to see lots of things to be unthankful for, you know? So, but when we have thankful hearts, you start noticing, oh, wait, this isn't actually that bad. Another quote from Nancy Wilson is, "Be zealous to be the kind of wife who is more concerned with pleasing God than with being pleased by her husband." As you repent and change your behavior and perspective, many, many times you'll be very surprised to see that there's a godly, respectable man that's been standing there the entire time. Nothing in him actually changed. It was how you were looking at him. So that definitely happened for me. I mean, do you guys see my husband? I saw a lot of flaws before I started respecting. It was almost exclusively what I saw. Well, he could do that better. Or why does he do it this way? Or what about this? And blah, blah, blah. Instead of seeing what an amazing man he is that God has turned him into, and to see what God's called him to do and how excellently he does those things. So that was quite a wake-up call for me. I was like, oh, look at that. You are great. So some common misperceptions is that it is only a feeling. And what's funny is you said that your dictionary is really old and fat. The newer and the more American the dictionary was that I looked in, it became all a feeling. The one on my computer a Mac computer. It's all cool looking. Its dictionary is horrible. It had it listed only as a feeling. And all the words were weak. They weren't strong words like revere. It was just, you know, basically a feeling of admiration. So it was kind of interesting to see that that's probably more and more what we think respect is. Another common misperception, and I see this a lot in the church, is that respect is a weak, passive activity. As we've talked about, it's not. Respect is a strong, humble, proactive recognition of God's established order. it's not just, you know, being a doormat and being like, okay, honey, and being foolish like that. But it's recognizing that your husband or your elders or your boss at your job or your father are put there by God as your authority. That is not weak, and it is not impotent either. There is, as we're going to see later, there are a lot of results from true biblical respect. Okay, so next I want to talk about why it's important. The first reason is obvious. There's a biblical mandate in Ephesians 5:33 and 1 Peter 3:2, and I think in there also. I think another reason sometimes that it's easy to kind of gloss over this is, my mom was pointing this out, respect is almost always listed in a passage after submission, and so I think that we tend to just kind of lump it in together with that. Well, I'm being obedient, so, you know, that's all I really need to do. Because here in 1 Peter, starting in verse 1, chapter 3, it says, "Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives, when they see your respectful and pure conduct." This verse already is hinting at the importance and strength that respect has. It's not passive and weak. It definitely accomplishes a lot. Another reason that respect is important is the impact that you will have on your household and your children. Proverbs 14, 1, This verse is actually, for any of you who have been to our house, this verse may be funny to you. 14:1 says, "The wisest of women builds her house, but folly with her own hands tears it down." Now, if you've been to our physical home, the main area is exposed studs, electrical cords, and we have our subflooring out. So sometimes I think, oh no, did I tear my own house down? But obviously that's not what it's talking about. It's talking about tearing down your spiritual home, and a lack of respect is definitely a key part of that. You are tearing your husband down. You're tearing your head down. It doesn't make any sense as you learn more and more about this. It's the stupidest thing we could do, but it's so much what our sin wants us to do. Also, just for your children, so much more is caught than is taught. If you're telling your kids about respect, but then you're not showing it, they're not learning respect. They're learning hypocrisy and disrespect. Instead of if you were just disrespectful and didn't tell them about respect, then they would just be learning disrespect. But by teaching and then living opposed to that, they're also learning to be hypocritical, which is very weighty on me. Whenever I see that in me, and I then look, and there's little Maggie with her big eyes looking at me, and I'm like, oh no. So that is definitely something that's important about it. Another thing with your kids is that you really can make or break your husband's role as father with his children. You set so much of how they view him. If it's a normal household, I did not grow up like this. I grew up in a house where my dad worked out of the house for most of the time, so I did see him physically there a lot. But most of the time, the kids see you the most. They're interacting with you. They only see their dad maybe at the beginning and the end of the day. You have a really big section in the middle to kind of shade and color how they see him. This is one that, for me, is very significant because, fortunately, we don't have this in our church, but so many pastors' families, the children grow up rejecting what their father has been preaching that whole time. And I don't want that to happen in my home. And I think that it happens so much because the wife lets her discontent be known and she complains. It may even sound spiritual. We just have to suffer because your dad, you know, those people at the church really need him. And oh, so he's not here with us again tonight. We're just going to have dinner alone. And, you know, there's that defeated, sad tone. But he's very godly, that kind of thing. That's so destructive to your poor children and to your husband. You're ripping him down in front of them. And they're left with such a sad picture of their dad. And if they're not getting to spend that enormous amount of time with him, they won't know differently. They will trust what you're saying. We have that opportunity to build up their father to them. And that's something that it's so exciting to me when I see how excited my kids are to see Sean when he comes home. And they have never showed any resentment yet. I understand she's very young, but towards the church. They're excited about that. They're excited that they share their dad with the people of Grace Bible Church and specifically with the students in 128. And they love that. Maggie was actually confused and then disappointed that I was coming to speak to the women's ministry because she thought I was going to go talk to the girls in 128. And she was like, well, who's going to talk to them today? And I was trying to explain to her, well, they're having small group and it's okay. And she was like, okay. But she really does have a heart for the ministry that her dad has. She's excited to be a part of that. And I hope that God can help me continue establishing that flavor in our home. And I do like that word too, flavor or aroma of your home. You establish so much of that. Is it discontent? Are you bitter? Are you sad? Are you down? Are you just, everything's awful? Are you thankful for the things that you have and for your husband in particular? That should be a pervasive feeling in your home. Okay, then this last one, if we thought these other ones were serious. This, I don't think I've even really started to take this in, but whether we like it or not, whether you're aware of it or not, and whether you mean it or not, you are reflecting the church's relationship to Christ and how you treat your husband. That is such a huge concept. It's just kind of like floating above me right now. It still has not even really sunk in. But you are preaching every time you're talking about your husband, talking to him, doing something for him, all of those things. We're a picture of that. In Ephesians 5 and verses 23 and 24, it says, and this is pretty clear, it's kind of hard to get out of this, "For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands." What does your respect and submission say about the church and Christ? That's amazing. We also, there's not time to get into all of this, but there's other aspects of theology that we reflect in our relationship to our husband as well. And I wish I had an hour to talk to you about the differences between the way Muslim women respond and interact to their husbands and the way that Christian women are called to interact with their husbands, and what a picture that is of the false God that they serve and the true God that we serve. But there's not time, but there's one that you could go study. It's actually, I had never even thought about that, that we are reflecting that we worship the one true triune God, not a monotheistic, demanding, hard God, but we are reflecting a God who is relating with himself. He's always been there relating with himself. And so we get to be a picture of that. And that's a pretty serious responsibility. That's not just, you know, oh, hey, I'll try to talk nicer to him next time. Okay, so then I wanted to talk about some of the hindrances. I got a note from one of you this week that was so encouraging, and one of the things that it had was why such a seemingly simple task can be so difficult to actually apply. And that is funny because, you know, when we were singing Trust and Obey, this is the song I was thinking about when I was studying, because that really is what we're called to do. We are called to trust and obey. In a lot of ways, it is just that simple. Respect and submit. And it will be okay. God will take care of you. But it doesn't seem that easy. And as soon, you know, you may get all pumped up because this is what happens. I read this book and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to do better. And you're all excited about it. And I'm going to reflect the church in Christ. And okay, let's go. And then as soon as your pride is stepped on a little bit, it's like, I don't want to do this. This is hard. And that really is the first and main hindrance. I just have sin in capital letters with an exclamation point. And I was asking Sean what verse he thought I should use for that one. He was like, I don't really think you need a verse. Our church does pretty good teaching on sin. Just sin. That's bad. And you need to keep working on fighting sin. And I was like, okay. So, you know, that's definitely the main reason that we have problems with it. One way that sin does show itself is that we do come to respect with false presuppositions that we have gained from lots of different places, including the cultural influences. And this is another one, along with the Muslim thing, that is fascinating. I had to cut a ton of information out of this when I was studying. But I think that you really, as you study it, you'll be surprised at how much Christian material is influenced by secular thinking, and then how much that's even trickled into how we approach things and the way that we think about things. If you are not quite as young and foolish as me, modernity may have influenced your view of authority, and you have a false view of authority. If you are young like me, probably postmodernism has affected it more, and just a outright rejection of authority. Well, who needs that? You can't tell me what to do. And then also, and this is my favorite topic right now that I'm studying, we here in the United States have our very own special breed of egalitarianism that is awful. And it's so pervasive. I cannot believe, the more that I study about it and the more that I look in my own heart and my own ways of thinking, it's like everywhere. And that is it's just basically we want everything to be fair. Because egalitarian, you know, especially if you do look at a newer dictionary, man, it sounds great. We want that. It's all about, you know, being nice to everyone and everyone should be treated well. And those, in some ways, it's good. You know, the people having equal rights here, in one sense, that's a very good thing in our country. We do want to recognize that people have equal value before God, but it's so quickly, and here in the United States, all it is just everyone is exactly the same. We all have the same abilities. We all have the same potential. We all have the same role. We all can do whatever we want. It's being preached to your children in Sesame Street. It's everywhere that you go, there is egalitarianism, and it's something that is such a strong influence in our thinking. We have to fight that all the time. So that one, that's really interesting if you read about that. Another one is just some unrecognized differences between boys and girls. This one, there's an excellent book by her husband called Future Men, and that actually really, again, helped me further apply respect because I realized, oh, boys and girls really are different, like a lot different. Girls come with a strong need and a big empty tank that needs to be filled with love all the time. When girls are running on low, they tend to get a little whiny, a little clingy, and show a little weakness. You know, oh, love me, love me. I noticed this tonight with my daughter. She was clearly running on empty, I think, because I've been studying. I haven't been pouring in enough. And she just started crying about nothing. It was like hanging on to me. And I was like, okay. You know, so you have to fill her up, tell her you love her, give her a bunch of hugs, and she's ready to go. And that's what's normal for us, for most of us. There are definitely exceptions to this, but this is the general pattern for boys and girls. Boys running on empty, their tank is not made for love. It's not the same tank. It's made for respect. When they're running on empty, they generally don't get clingy and whiny. They become little bragging, chest out, look at me, I'm so cool. And they show off and they're jumping off of stuff and they're hitting people and they're, you know, displaying their strength because no one else is recognizing it. Once I finally understood that, I was like, because I felt like I had been pouring into Sean a lot. I was like, I am filling his tank. He's just not noticing. I keep telling him, I love you so much. I keep trying to hug him. I am holding his hand. And he is just acting like I don't do anything. Once I realized, oh, that's because this is doing nothing. It's not even sort of going into the tank. It's like talking a different language to him. Once I started saying things like, thank you for going to work every day. Thank you for sweeping out the garage. Thank you so much for being a faithful husband. Thank you for reading your Bible. I really appreciate that. I love how you do this. I really look up to you because of this, this, and this. Suddenly, it was like his tank was full. I was like, okay, this is making sense. He's a boy and I'm a girl. So, and again, you know, a lot of that is that cultural influence. Boy and girl differences don't mean anything. We're told all the time that they're the same and equal. And the only reason that there's a difference between a little boy and a little girl is we give them a truck and a doll. That's the difference. And all of you that have a boy and a girl know that that's ridiculous. That's not true. They come out like that. But our husbands need respect, and we are in the God-appointed position to give it to them. That is such a privilege that we get to participate that way. And it's such a strong role. Again, it's not weakness. It's not an unimportant activity, you know, that we're sacrificing something that really matters to sit here and try to fill up his tank. That is a vital thing that needs to happen. And I did want to say that the bragging idea does go for men as well. If you notice that your husband is, you know, kind of telling you more about what he did and, oh yeah, well, then I did this and, you know, and I said this to this guy and then I went out and I did all of these things and it was really hard. And, you know, and you're like, okay. A lot of times that means that the tank is empty and you need to pour on the respect, give him more. And, most times that does a lot. They just need a little bit of that filling up, just like we do. When we start, because I mean, I am so obvious. I can't contain anything inside of me. I'm like, somebody hug me. I'm wandering around. Someone needs to love me. I'm empty. I have holes in my tank. It's all pouring out. And that's another thing, too. When your husband is under a lot of stress, that is like holes in his tank. If he has a whole bunch of other stuff going on or there are a lot of people criticizing him, just look at your job now as filling up a colander. Like, you need to keep pouring in. And that is your job. You don't want him to go somewhere else to get that respect that he wants so badly. So that is your job and your privilege to do that. So this section, I tried for a really long time to organize this. This is the how-to section. What do I do? I could not organize this. So it's just kind of going to be a rapid-fire assortment of things to do or think about. And there's no particular order. So if I get going too fast or you don't understand what I'm saying, you can ask me later and maybe I can help you out. Okay, one of the first ones is to avoid thinking, I would respect my husband if he only, or you don't understand what my husband's like. I would do that if I was married to your husband, but you don't understand what my situation is. This misses the definition of respect that we just went over. It's not based on his respectability. This part always gets me when I think this. When I was writing it down, it was even worse. Do you want to be loved only when you're lovely? That's God has called your husband to love you. What if he only loved you when you were lovely? That would be awful. I can't tell you how many times. I mean, I think especially when I was pregnant with Calvin, I was sick for so long. I think that I wore these same pajamas for months on end. Like they would get washed and I would just put them right back on. I would shower and then lay down on the bathroom floor and then crawl to the bed. And I looked horrific. I was constantly ill. I do not want Sean to stop loving me during that time. I'm not lovely. And I was emotional and pretty much just a disaster. There's a lot of crying and a lot of sickness. And that was that time in my life. So, but he was faithful to love me through that time. And he didn't say, well, yeah, I would give you a hug if you would make your hair stop looking so gross, or if you, you know, get some real pants on instead of those flannel ones or whatever. What about when you're just cranky? Or you're in any other kind of sin. We don't want our husbands to stop loving us then. We should not be holding respect out as a reward for doing what we have decided they need to do. Even if you think that your husband is wrong, you think he doesn't care, you think he isn't spiritual enough, you think he's too passive, you think he doesn't understand, you think he isn't saved, you think he's harsh, impatient, unkind, you think he acts like a child, you think he doesn't have common sense. It doesn't matter. You are called to respect him. The encouraging part on this point is love bestows loveliness and respect bestows respectability. If when we are faithfully loved as Christian women by Christian husbands, we should be getting progressively more lovely, because that Christian love is not just a feeling or a, you know, a bunch of flowers. It's a sanctifying work. Love comes in and does something to us. Christ's love has changed us. Our husband's love does the same thing to us. We should be becoming more and more lovely. He should be helping us refine areas that are sinful in our lives, all of those things. When you respect, it's a little bit different. It's not the exact same process as with a girl. But just as when you love your daughter, I watch, you know, with Maggie, when her little tank is empty and I start filling it up, she is suddenly more secure. She doesn't need to be clinging onto my leg, asking me where I'm going, when are you coming back? She's okay. Okay, you can leave. I'll see you in, you know, 2 hours. I kept telling her, I'm going to come back in 2 hours. And she's like crying. But as our tanks are filled up with love, we become more secure and less needy. As your husband's tank is filled up with respect, it's a little bit different. It's more like a little bit of weight sits down on him. And men respond to that. They stand up stronger. Ooh, I have to carry this weight. I have to be the man. I'm going to be strong. And, you know, she thinks that I'm really godly. Well, I better make sure I'm really godly. And she thinks I'm a great provider. Am I really providing? And then it encourages them to go out and do more. It's definitely not the same. That would not have that impact on me. I think I would pretty much be like, oh my gosh, they're expecting so much. I can't do this. But I'm not a man. So on that one, I really like, my husband loves spy kind of movies. And then we watched this cowboy thing. He was like, that's cool. It's like this. I'm like, how is this cool? It's a cowboy all alone. He has no friends. He's totally alone. And he's got these other guys that are working for him and they don't really like him, but they think he's a good cowboy. And I suddenly put it together because the spies are always alone too. And Spider-Man is his favorite superhero. And I'm like, why do you like all these alone, sad people? And I finally realized it's because they're respected. They're so good at what they do. It doesn't matter to them that people don't like them. It's that the people recognize Spider-Man is saving the city. This cowboy is such a good cowboy. And these spies, we can't, you know, save our country without them. So that is such a different view of life than we have. We need to remember that when we're trying to communicate to them, that they're not thinking the same as we are and their needs are not the same as ours. Spider-Man is not my favorite superhero. I think he's very depressing. Okay, another thing that you can do is to meet your own responsibilities. Take care of your own calling. If you are busy with your own stuff to do, your own things that God has called you to take care of, you're going to have a lot less time to be critical of what you think he's failing in. On this one, this really did happen to me. I keep thinking that I must have made it up, but I know that it happened. I was talking with a girl, and she said to me, I'm having such a bad day. I went to my mom's, and when I got there, I didn't have any of the right clothes for the kids. It's so frustrating, and now we can't go back. She had this whole big day she was going to do, and she only had, like, one diaper and no bathing suits. They were supposed to go swimming, and then nothing to put them in after that. And I was like, oh, that is annoying. And I'm thinking, how did that even happen? And and so then I think I said, well, why don't you have all that stuff? And she said, my husband packed the diaper bag wrong. And it's like time froze. And I was like, oh, what? And so then I was quiet for a while. And I said, you know, I'm really having a hard time feeling sympathy for you right now, because for me, you know, everyone does have a different husband, and there are husbands that enjoy packing diaper bags, I'm sure. I know that there are husbands that love being the ones that wash all the kids at night. So, okay. But I don't have this husband. So I said, I'm just having a hard time even relating to what you're saying, because I would stop the sentence at my husband packed the diaper bag, and I would be wondering, what in the world did I do wrong today that my husband is packing the diaper bag? And that's not to say that if your husband is that kind of guy, man, enjoy it. Like, live it up and be really thankful. But for me, I don't have that husband, and I'm thrilled that I don't, because for me, that's great. I do want to pack the diaper bag. If he started packing it, I would be like, stop, please don't do that. But for me, diapering in particular has really turned into kind of like the figurehead of my responsibilities. It represents what I am called to do. I know that it's really weird, but it's true. I cloth diapered Calvin, and I am so thankful for the theology that it brought into my physical life. It's real. It's not something I just throw in the trash. It's time I'm spending with my child. It's my calling to help clean him and take care of him and raise him and then teach him to use the bathroom like a normal person. And for me, it's, I don't know, it's just very significant. So the diaper bag is part of that. I want to take my calling seriously and recognize that those little mundane tasks are not actually mundane. They are huge and just as important as preaching. I am called to diaper my child just as Sean is called to preach the word. And, oh, I forgot about this verse. I can't believe I didn't put this in here. In Titus 2, isn't it in Titus 2? Yes, 2:5, thank you. Okay, so it's talking about, and so train the young women, I'm a young woman, to love their husbands and children. And I love that when you look at this word for love, it's much more, it's not like love like a feeling or even love like a commitment. It's love like to be into, to enjoy, like to be all about that. So to be into their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. That is crazy. How can we ever think that what we're doing is not important, so that the word of God may not be reviled? We are preaching in our diapering or in whatever it is that you're doing at home, cooking, dishes, all of those things, respecting our husbands. We are preaching. That is that's amazing. Okay, now I'm all distracted. So anyway, let's just remember to not, if you are busy preaching the word through your conduct at home, you're really not going to even have time to be like, well, then he didn't do this and he's dumb. Okay, see, I thought that was my favorite part, but I think this is my favorite part. Okay, you should make your respect personal. We're not submitting to just a vague, I think in our country especially, it's hard to remember this. Like when we think of the government, it's like this blah bureaucracy with no personality, and it's, you know, forms and regulations and endless nothingness. Everything's just gray and the same. We are not submitting to that. We're submitting to a personal head. God did not put you in a relationship just with a husband A, you know, that's exactly the same as her husband and her husband and her husband. He puts you with a very personal person. So much of your application of respect is dependent on your husband's makeup, his personality, his preferences, his calling, and even his health. Under the same point, you should learn about what he does and who he is. For me, this has been a great opportunity to learn about what my husband does. I've always known that it took a lot of work, but I don't think that I understood the pressure that he would communicate to me sometimes on Saturday night. He would say, I have to have something to say tomorrow. I need to finish this so that I know what I'm going to say tomorrow. And I was like, okay, I know that, but you've been doing this all week. But now that I'm working on one message for months and I was starting to freak out. I have to have something to say, and it's only me. I'm the only one talking. So I have a deeper understanding and some ideas then of maybe what I could do to ease Saturday night a little bit for him instead of just being like, okay, sorry, you know, and then just leaving him alone. But maybe there's a way that I can help him with that. What communicates respect to him? This is, again, different for different men. Living in my house with my dad and my husband and my son honestly, it's a lot like living with Martin Luther down with my mom and John Calvin down at my end. Sean is very precise and he's much more formal. He likes things to be structured and orderly and calm. He likes things calm and taken care of. My dad is like, ooh, this is too calm. Let's make it crazy. And stirring it up and being very passionate. The way that my mom respects my dad is completely different than how I respect Sean. And my dad is actually a little bit offended if you try to respect him in a more formalized, you know, structured way, traditional. He's like, what's that? So you need to know what your husband is like. What are your husband's interests and preferences? This one's kind of fun. You may need to learn about sports, hunting, theology, history, fishing, computers. My mom gave me this one. Chess. But my dad does play chess, so maybe that's true. Investing, cars, the list goes on and on. I don't know what your particular husbands are into, but for me, it's pretty simple. It's Apple computer, Starbucks coffee, and God. So that, I can handle that. I can keep track of those three areas. Now, I hate coffee, but I know a lot about it. Here's a funny one. This one, I have a friend who, she does actually struggle with this. She struggles with respecting her husband because one of the ways that he loves her is he adorns her. He gives her ridiculous gifts of clothing and jewelry and just wants her to be, he wants to just dress her up as beautiful as she is and show her that all the time. She's embarrassed by it. I think that if she was not married, she would be dressed in jeans and a t-shirt all the time. She'd be very plain and not be drawing any attention to herself. She has had to learn to submit by wearing fancier, showier clothes than she would want to wear on her own because that's how her husband shows her love. And he is made happy and feels respected when she wears those things. I do think that that is one of the weirdest things, but I know it's really been a struggle for her. So for me, the best thing that happened for me with the personal aspect of respect is I read a book called, just hang on, Marriage to a Difficult Man. Now, he gave it to me actually as a joke. He got it at the Shepherd's Conference and he was like, hey, I brought this home for you. I thought you'd need it. And I was like, oh, that's funny. So, and it's about Jonathan and Sarah Edwards. And so I open it up and the first page explains that in their time, difficult meant genius. And I was like, that's why you gave this to me. You think you're a genius. And he said, no way does it say that. And I was like, it does. And he's like, oh. So, I read it because I just thought it'd be interesting, but it ended up being, I didn't know that my husband was that actually much like Jonathan Edwards. And it helped me understand him so much. And seeing Sarah Edwards' example was, it's invaluable to me. She was amazing. For me, one of them, I grew up in a house where the wife collects up all the trash in the house and then she puts the bag near the door. And then the husband takes the bag out to the trash cans and then the trash cans to the street on the day they need to go out there. So this, of course, is what I did. I would collect up the house around the trash, collect up all the trash around the house, put it at the front door. Such a nice location for my husband who comes in from work, tripping over the bag of trash, so that he can take it out. Of course, I had lots of time to do this on my own, but that's not what I do. So anyway, even once I learned about respect, that was still a legitimate struggle for me in my heart. I was like, I don't understand why he can't take out the trash. I was doing it at this point, but I was kind of irritated that I was doing it because doesn't he know that the husband takes out the trash? Everyone knows that. It's so stupid, but that's really what I thought. Reading that book, Jonathan Edwards didn't do anything. He studied God's word and rode his horse and walked around and spent time with his family. That is all he did. He didn't do anything. Husbands during that time, all of the other husbands were doing tons of physical labor on their property and in their homes. They were responsible for a lot of things. He really did not do any of that. There is no record of her complaining about that or even mentioning that it's weird or asking him to do any of it. She just picked all of it up and did it. She recognized, she didn't know that she was married to Jonathan Edwards, but she knew that she was married to a man that was called by God. And all of us are married to men who are called by God if they are believers. I wish that we did have more of that Puritan understanding of vocational calling. My husband does not do something more important than your husband. All of our husbands are called by God to do exactly what they are doing, unless they're in sin. So she understood that he had a calling, and he was a unique, different person than the other men in the neighborhood, and she just didn't worry about it. She just took the trash out. So suddenly, I thought, I should probably just take the trash out. So, and the interesting part is I didn't know that that is the thing that would end up triggering the thing about the diapers. God put me with Sean for a reason. I like that. Where some women might feel overwhelmed by needing to be responsible for car upkeep or taking the trash out or whatever, you know, doing all of those things. I love that. I actually do thrive on it. When Sean changed one of Calvin's diapers for the first time, I think Calvin was like 15 months old or something. And I really did not like that he did it. I didn't like that situation came up where he had to do it. And it's because I really enjoy it. I'm really taking pleasure in that role of helping my husband and not giving him more work to do. And it's not the same for everybody's husbands there. I do know that there are lots of husbands who they enjoy that. And so you should let them do that. So anyway, that's a great book. Your husband might not be like that, but you can look for other books that describe husbands that are like yours, or watch wives who have husbands that are like yours to see how they're respecting them. Another point is that we need to make sure that we're verbally communicating our respect. This is tough because women like to talk, and we don't always think about what we're saying or how we're saying it. We need to examine how we talk to our husbands and how we talk about them. This really is vital. Don't run him down to his face or behind his back. You don't need to share his faults. We all know that you are married to a sinner. We've probably even seen him sin, so we don't need you to tell us about it. Another one, this one, I think with the more kids that you get, this is probably more difficult. I don't know if y'all have seen that show, John and Kate Plus 8, the lady that has the twin girls that are like 6 and then the 6 2-year-olds. It's crazy. And I don't even know if she's a believer, but I'm not criticizing her necessarily, but she has all of these kids, and she's like constantly policing them and directing them and moving them from one place to another and dressing them and wiping off their faces and telling them what to do. And her husband walks in the door, and it's like, and you, go do this and this and this and this and this, and why didn't you take care of this, and you need to go do this. And you can see him like, okay, here we are. But we should not talk to our husbands like they're one of the kids or like they're one of your friends or they're just somebody that's in the way or needs to go take care of their responsibilities so that you can take care of yours. We again need to remember that he is in a special God-ordained position, and we need to talk to him like he is in that position. Okay, now that obviously I'm not saying, you know, that you need to talk to him, like all formal, like we're in England or something. Again, a lot of that depends on your husband. My dad does not like being talked to like that, but my husband does like being talked to a little bit more formally and not flippantly. Another thing you can do, I've done this one a lot, especially when I am struggling with respect, you can write him a respect letter. This has been a great exercise for me. because it really makes me sit down and think about it. It's easy to write a love letter. Oh, I love you. You're amazing. Blah, blah, blah. But to actually sit down and think of all of the things that you appreciate about him and that you're grateful for is a great exercise, and he will really appreciate it. I know that Sean has really liked those notes that I've written him. On the same line, thank him for a lot of things. Don't take the little things or standard things for granted. One of the things that I like that Nancy Wilson says is, have you thanked him for coming home every night? Have you thanked him for going to his job every day? This is something that not all women have, and we need to not take those things for granted and be thankful for that work that he does. This one I didn't know what to name, so my mom named it for me. The fullness of respect. Are you showing regard for your husband in all areas or just where it's convenient? And again, this is so specific to your individual husbands, but cleanliness of your home, of your kids, yourself. Does he wish that everything was cleaner? Does he wish that you weren't stressing out about how clean it was and that you let it get a little bit messy and so you were a little bit more fun to be around? Does he like how you dress? Does he like how you dress your kids? Have you ever asked him that? Find out. Maybe he does have a preference. He might not. Sometimes these things, he's just like, whatever, it's cool. But he may have a priority, and you should probably know. Have you talked to him about your priorities? Does he think that you're using your time wisely, even your free time? What about the way that you take care of the chores that you have? What about the way that you talk? How about extended family relations? Does he like how you are handling, you know, calling his mom or your mom or whatever, aunts and uncles and cousins and all of that? Are you considering him and how you handle your money? Again, this is like the cleanliness thing. Are you spending too much of his money and being unwise that way? Does he wish that you were a little bit tighter, or does he wish that you would loosen up and have a little bit of fun instead of spending 4 hours saving 30 cents on this kind of yogurt and going to 47 thrift stores and look, I bought this for $2 instead of just, you know, kind of loosening up and going with the flow. My husband likes a little bit, you know, I'm like, Sean, look, I saved us 15 cents. It took me 4 hours. And he's like, okay, I don't want you to do that. Let's just forget the 15 cents and enjoy life. And I'm like, okay. What about your friends, the women that you spend time with? Are they women that he would want you to be spending time with? Are they encouraging you to respect more? Are you encouraging them to respect more? What about your hobbies? How much you talk? Man, that one is killer for me. I love talking to Sean. I like talking to quite a few people, but I like talking to Sean. I want his input on everything, but I know that it drives him nuts. He'll be sitting next to me trying to read something, and, you know, I'll do good for a little bit, and then I'm like, oh, and then I was reading in the Old Testament about this, and then, do you know about that? What, did you read that in seminary? What does that mean? Why did you do that? You know, and he stops and he answers me, and I really have to work on that, because for Sean, he is such an intense single track mind kind of person. For him to stop reading, listen to what I'm saying, answer me, and then transition back into reading, this is not an easy task. This is like actually really difficult. It's like taking an entire train off of the tracks, putting it on a different set, and then putting it right back on this set. So I really have to work at that. But my dad, on the other hand, is always like, hey, come talk to me, to my mom, you know, and she's more quiet, and he wants her to chit-chat and just sit with them and whatever. So, you know, think about him and those kind of things. What about the discipline of the kids? Are you following what you know he would like, or is it more your style that's going on when he's not there? Remember that he is the head of the household, and he gives account for how you are training the children. That is weighty. Another one for me, I mean, this is so convicting to study this stuff, timeliness. Does he wish that you were on time? Does he hate that you're 20 minutes early everywhere? Does he wish you would just relax a little bit? For me, having two children, for a long time, I was like 35 minutes late everywhere I went. I've got it now down to like 4 minutes late, but I know Sean would like it if I was 5 minutes early. And so I need to keep working on that to get the crew where we need to be on time. Because that does, he is communicated respect that way. Traditions in your family. Have you asked him if he likes the holiday traditions you have, whatever other ones you do? Exercise. Sean really prefers if I exercise each day, not because he wants a skinny wife, but because he wants a wife that is not stressed out. And I am a high energy ball of tension. But when I go for a little jog, 20-minute jog every day, I'm a lot easier to be around. So he really prefers that. What about what time you go to bed? What time you get up? All of these things. It's endless. You could go through every part of your life. Another thing that you can do in the how-tos is look to examples. We have amazing examples, obviously, in the Bible. One of my favorites is Noah's wife. There's no account of what she does, but can you imagine if your husband came home and said, God just talked to me. He's going to destroy the entire earth, and he wants me to build this massive boat, and it's going to start raining. And we don't really know what that is, but it's going to start raining, and we need to build this boat, and then we're going to get all these animals in the boat. I would be like, okay. Like, that is crazy. And apparently, she went along with it. I'm sure at some point she probably thought, well, this is weird. I wonder why we're doing this. But she didn't fight him on it. She went ahead and did that. And that's a good benefit that she did, because she would have died otherwise. So it's a good thing she did that. Abigail, who we're going to talk about a little bit at the end, is an amazing example. Sarah, Ruth shows so much respect right from the beginning, and Mary's a respectable man. Good choice. And then Mary shows us a lot too about how God leads through the husband. She doesn't question when Joseph comes to her and says, God just talked to me last night, and he says that this is what we need to do. She says, okay. And she goes along with, what he says. God directs the family through the husband. So anyway, as you're reading, put yourself in their shoes and try to emulate their trust in the Lord. Remember that it's not their trust in their husband, it's their trust in the Lord, and that's always the thing that carries us through. It's not that your husband is trustworthy, it's that God is trustworthy. And then the historical examples, like I said, for me, Edwards, I always do think to be Katie Luther would have been exciting. Luther stuck his foot in his mouth so many times. And he was a reformer. The reformers were not well-liked people in their community. Like, they were going against all the established authority that was around them. This is not like a time where they had, you know, CNN and they could see what was going on in all the other countries. They're in a very small world right here. And your husband decides, no, right here, these people are wrong. We're doing the wrong thing. And then he goes and nails up this thing on the door and everyone hates you. And that's like, those are difficult situations to respect in. And what a blessing that they did. And that is some of what allows those men to do what God wants them to do, because they know that they have that support at home. And then right around us, there are so many women in our church who understand respect in a very deep way. I was talking with someone today about how I have watched them so closely. I've never seen a crack. Most women, even the women who are doing really well, I've seen cracks, obviously, because it's difficult and we're sinful. But there's one person I've never even seen a hint. And it took me probably 3 years of studying to respect to even realize she was respecting. I just thought, oh, they just get along that well. And then as I was thinking about it, I was like, no, you know what? I bet she's actually really respecting that well. That is impressive. So just look around you and watch what they're doing, and don't assume that it's easy because it looks effortless. Ask questions too. Ask the women around you, you know, how are you doing that? How did you learn to do this? Whatever, those kind of things. There's another one that's kind of a lighthearted example. You know, sometimes it's easy to think, for someone like me, well, of course she respects her husband. He's just amazing. But we also have some women in our church that are not married to men who love God. And that is, a completely different situation. I can't even imagine, because I get so much strength and encouragement from Sean's example. But, there's a woman, in our church who, her husband told her one summer, you can't water the garden anymore. It's too much money. Our water bill's too high and I don't want you to. And she loved her garden and was like, okay. She submitted to this. To me, it seems like an unreasonable request. I don't know. I wasn't there. We don't understand his responsibility of paying all those bills. We don't know what he was thinking and what burdens were on him. But she submitted to it. She went without saying, well, that's crazy. This is insane. I don't get to water my garden. I put all this work into it. But she went back and thought about it, and she realized she could, in her washing machine, get the rinse water out. Now, since that I've talked to her, I didn't know that she didn't know you can just take the hose out of the back of the washing machine and have it drain into a bucket. She was actually taking a bucket, putting it into the washing machine, pulling the water out, putting it into a bigger bucket. And then, so she asked her husband if that would be okay to take that water and then water her garden with it. And she gave him, he gave her permission to do that. And so she went about watering her garden in a back-breaking way until then he, watching that quiet obedience, saw that and then said, you know what? You can water your garden. That is, I mean, it's such a tiny little thing, but that does have an impact on him. He sees that without a word, she is quietly respecting him. And she knows that that is not, he knows that that's not because he is an amazing person. He knows that that's because she loves God. And that is, that has an impact on him. And hopefully God will use those things to save him. Anyway, that kind of leads into when it's a hard situation to submit. Now, on this part, I'm not talking about women who are married to abusive, violent, you know, just wicked men like that. I'm talking about women who are married to normal men. And it's going to be hard, always. Let's talk about Abraham. Do we think Abraham is a godly man? Yes. He's clearly godly. He's being directed by God out loud. However, Abraham put his wife in a very awkward position in Genesis 12. I mean, there is no record of what she says to him. It's hard for me to believe that she didn't go, "Are you serious? Like, you want me to do what?" But we do know that she obeyed him. They were going into Egypt, and Sarah must have been amazingly beautiful, because this is such a beauty that he knows that they're going to get stopped in this massive flood of people that's going to Egypt. They're going to get stopped because she's that pretty, and the king is going to want to, that Pharaoh is going to want to take her as his own wife. And so Abraham tells her, "Okay, well, look, you're my half-sister anyway. We'll just say you're my sister. We're not going to mention that you're my wife. That way they're not going to want to kill me. I'll be safe that way." And I know what my feeling would be. "Well, nice that you're concerned about your safety. What about me? I got to go live with Pharaoh. I don't want to do that, you know? Like, I don't want to be married to him, and that doesn't seem good." You know, I can't imagine that any of us have ever been put in a situation anything like this, with this kind of risk because of our husband's folly. I can't. Maybe this kind of thing is happening to you. I don't think so, though. The worst part is, okay, so Sarah gets through this okay. Let's go to Genesis 20. Abraham now is going into a different country, and he decides they're really going to like my wife too. We'll just do that thing we just did that God totally called him out for. Okay, so she submits again to this crazy, dangerous, completely selfish plan that Abraham has to, you know, "Well, you just go with Abimelech. It'll be fine. That way I'll stay alive." You know, he's showing no faith in God. This is obviously, he's sinning. So she obeyed both times. I think that on this one, she probably had a case, a biblical case, a godly case to say, "No, I don't want to do this. This is lying. This doesn't seem wise. We just did this. God just told us this was a bad idea. I don't think we should do this." She still obeyed. And that's because she did not trust Abraham. She trusted God. She knew that God had given her Abraham as her husband and that he would take care of her. This kind of trust, I don't have this kind of faith at all. And in 1 Peter 3, verses 5 and 6, she is held up as our example. "For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, by submitting to their husbands. As Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you are her children if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening." I love this verse. This verse, as women, we need to read verse 6 1,000 times a day. "If you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening." It doesn't say not to be afraid that the wind is blowing in the trees, but to that you won't fear things that are frightening. It is frightening for your husband to abandon you to a foreign king to be part of his harem. That's frightening. I don't want that to happen to me. I can't even imagine. And she obeyed because she trusted God, not Abraham or herself. On this point, this is also a little bit disorganized, but when it's hard, if your husband is sinning or just is doing something that you don't fully understand, you're not on board with, you don't totally get where he's going, don't feel the need to answer for him to other people or to excuse his behavior. That's not your place. He is the head. He is the one taking the responsibility. He's been given that responsibility by God. Let that responsibility fall on him. Whether it's just that you need to get on board and get up to speed, or he's in sin, he answers for that. You do not answer for your husband's sin. It's not your job to explain it away to the people at the church, or, you know, another example would be if your husband has gotten you into financial trouble and there's bill collectors calling. don't be the one to talk to bill collectors. Don't try to explain to them what you're going to do. It's his responsibility to get you out of that. Let him talk to the bill collectors. If another woman at church comes up to you and is like, well, what are you guys doing with that? Why did you buy that house? Or what is you driving that truck for? Or, you know, put in a zillion other options there. Don't gossip about your husband and don't excuse your husband. That's not your job. And also don't even try to be embarrassed. I mean, it's not your, there's nothing to be embarrassed about if your husband has been foolish or you just don't understand. You serve a mighty God and he will not, abandon you to something silly like that. On that note too, be careful what you say to other women about their husband's behavior. Remember that they don't answer for him. They're not responsible for him. And they may be struggling to respect, and it's not going to help them if you're like, what the heck is he doing? We need to remember to leave a little courtesy there, a little space, and not ask them to answer for that. And again, the same thing with the respect for the man. He does thrive under that pressure of responsibility, and so don't feel that you need to take it from him. It's better if he has it on his shoulders. Okay, so that's kind of the what you could do. Then what about the results of respect? And this is the part that I'm so excited about, because I think that this gets kind of washed over in a lot of the talks about submission. You know, it sounds just like a lot of work, and it's bad, and you just have to submit, and God will take care of you. You get to go to heaven. it's not just that. If we are faithfully pursuing biblical respect, and I don't mean faithfully consistently or, you know, correctly, I mean faithfully full of faith in God. If you're pursuing biblical respect, full of faith in God, the blessings are abounding. And that's totally the stress and obey song. For the favor he shows and the joy he bestows are for them who will trust and obey. And that really is what this is. You're trusting God and you're obeying by respecting. He blesses you. You're not alone. And the things that I can't believe is that it's not just you get to go to heaven. I have seen so much blessing in my life and so much just personal happiness that I don't even need because of increased respect. Lots of times you'll see your husband does change. Your husband is like, oh, I'm being respected. And they do step it up a little bit. You probably will receive more love from your husband as you give him more respect. I thought that this wasn't going to work. This is the part that, you know, I'm like math brain. I'm like, no. If I put respect into him, then that's what he's going to think that I want. And he's just going to respect me back. No, doesn't work like that. It's not a math formula. It's God. So as I respected him, he became much more gentle and tender and loving towards me. And I was like, wow, I didn't even need this. You know, and the same basic biblical principles of obedience apply here. It's just like we tell our kids, if you stay in the circle of protection, if you obey what I say, you have blessings. If you leave the circle, I can't protect you, and the blessings don't happen out here. I don't know what's going to happen if you leave the circle of protection. So it's the same for us. You are in a protected area by respecting and submitting to your husband. So anyway, you probably will be surprised by some of the changes even in your marriage. Some of it will be your perspective. And I love Nancy Wilson says this. I think this is so funny. I'm not trying to make this too simplistic, saying that if you respect your husband, all your troubles will go away. But frankly, most of them will. This happened to me. I thought that it was going to be a really long, complicated process. I would have to change all of these different things and it'd be really long. I would say probably within, I don't know, 3 or 4 days of me really working on this, a lot of things changed. I saw a different husband who I think had been there the entire time, and then he began changing. And then I changed more. And both of us were a lot happier. And it just keeps getting better and better and better. So I think that that's funny. Now, that's not to lessen serious troubles that some women have. But anyway, a lot of it is just that you change from seeing his sin to seeing your sin. And then you know to trust God and repent from that sin and work on those things. Anyway, and then again, the changes that you see in your husband. This is again her quote, "Sometimes I wonder where the church would be today if the men in it were respected as they ought to be by their wives." That really is powerful, and it really is true. It's the, while it's not a magic formula, respect a man, and then it'll turn into a godly, amazing, whatever. You know, just like parenting, faithful Christian parenting does not always produce faithful Christian children, but generally that is how God works. God generally does that. And so if we faithfully respect our husbands, generally God will cause them to be more and more respectable. And he does amazing things through men who are respected. And then that also always makes me think of Proverbs 31 in verses 10 through 12. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. I do not do, Sean, nothing but good and not harm. But that is what I want. And I know that when your husband can trust you because he knows that you're doing him good, he is freed up to do the things that God is calling him to do. Some wrong responses that do not bring blessing is a legalistic, self-powered approach to respect. And this is something that I fall into in every area of my life, is this kind of legalism where I can sanctify myself. Look, I'm going to work harder, faster, longer. This is deadly. This brings death to you. It's awful. You will feel so bitter and angry and discontent and alone and discouraged. God does not call us to do this on our own. It is an overwhelming, impossible task without him, and that's not what he's calling us to. He's calling us to rely on him and his strength and to simply trust and obey instead of trying to do it on our own power. Okay, so I'm pretty much done here. The last thing, though, that I know that we need to address are some special cases. I don't know all of you, and I don't know your particular situations. Some of you may be in particularly difficult situations with a blatantly disobedient or unbelieving husband. And I am going to be reading most of this because I don't want to mess this up. I put a lot of time into this and had Sean check it because these are very sensitive areas. So I just want to be careful. We don't have time to fully address these problems at all, but I do want us to take a quick look at the biblical example we have in Abigail. I don't know how I missed Abigail the few times that I had read the story before, but this is a powerful story, and it's in 1 Samuel 25. We don't even have time to read this whole thing, but I would encourage you, especially if you're in one of those situations or you know a woman that is in one, to read this, because this is an amazing story if you put yourself in Abigail's position. If you just read it, it's kind of like, okay. But if you pretend that you're Abigail, this is serious business. This is like a lot of stuff is going on here. She is described as being a wise, believing woman, and she's married to an outright fool. He's described as worthless, which I was like, whoa, that's harsh. The men who work for him know that he's worthless. She knows this. Everyone knows this. This is his complete reputation. He's a moron. Abigail was put in a position where one of the workers of her husband came to her and said, King David is coming through and he wants to be taken care of. I don't remember if he needed food or something like that. The servants had gone to Nabal, her husband, and said, David's coming through. He needs some help. Oh, no, he wasn't King David, though, at this point, was he? Saul is still king. Anyway, he's coming through. He needs help. And he says, no way. I'm not helping him. I don't have time for this. I don't want to do that. And he was a jerk about it also. He wasn't just like, you know, saying, no, you know, we're really stressed right now. We don't have enough time. We really have to take care of these other responsibilities. He was like, no, go away. I'm not going to help you. So one of the servants comes to Abigail and tells her what's happened and tells her that King David is now not happy at all and is coming to destroy their entire household. This is very bad. This is like a bad result of your husband being disobedient. This is not even like the IRS is coming to repossess your car. This is he's coming and he's going to kill you. So Abigail went against her husband behind his back and without delay. This is not normally the kind of behavior that we want to have as Christian women, is completely disregarding our husband, going completely against what they've said and not even telling them about it. However, Abigail knew that her husband was a worthless, foolish man who disregarded God in every area of his life. So this is a very unique case, like the kind that we're talking about right now. This is a case where submission to God negated the call to submitting to her husband. Because also, David, as a representative of the king, is a legitimate authority also. And for him to say, you need to put up my men and take care of us, is a legitimate thing. There's no reason to disobey that as a Christian. But this is my favorite part. Because one of the questions I was asked as I was preparing, and it threw me off at first, was when you need to address when Christian women should disrespect their husbands. And I thought, I don't know. So I started studying, and I decided, never. We should sometimes disobey our husbands. This is, again, in a very unique case where a husband is blatantly telling you to disobey God. If that is happening, you do need to disobey your husband. But I don't think there's any scriptural precedent for us to disrespect our husbands in any circumstance. Because if you look at verses 36 to 37, when I first read this, I didn't understand why they were even in there. And Abigail came to Nabal. Abigail has now gone to David. She went behind Nabal's back and said, "My husband is stupid. I am so sorry. Please accept my apologies. Let me," and she brought all this food and all this stuff. And she gave it to David and was like, "Please forgive Nabal for being this foolish. Take this and don't destroy my house. Please." He could have killed her right there. She was definitely putting herself at risk, but she was doing what she knew she needed to do to protect everyone else at home. And David responded kindly and said, "Yes, I won't kill your family. Great. Thank you for all this stuff. Bye." So now she goes home, and I'm thinking, gosh, what would you do in this situation? Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he was holding a feast in his house like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. Which I always think, I was always like, why did they tell us that? That's so funny. So she told him nothing at all until the morning light. In the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. So I read this a few times, and I was like, okay, but why does she wait? I don't get it. Because I'm thinking, I'm not around any drunk people, but I would think his heart is very merry. This is a good time to tell him some bad news, you know? Maybe he won't remember. I'm just going to tell him, oh, fun party. Hey, by the way, David was going to come kill us, but I stopped him. I gave him some food. It's all cool. Let's party. This seems like a good time to me to tell him to avoid problems. But she waits until he's sober. And as I thought about it, I think that it's because she is respecting him. She is recognizing his authority and his responsibility. She knows he's totally stupid and does all of the wrong things, but he's still going to answer to God, so he needs to know what has happened. So she waits for him to be sober. That's amazing. So she tells him, and then I love what God does here. God takes care of her. The entire weight of Nabal's sin falls directly on him. I don't know if it's because he really did suddenly realize, oh man, I'm stupid, but his heart became as a stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal and he died. Wow. That's like a pretty serious result of being stupid. You know, and for Abigail, I'm sure she thought, I don't know exactly what he was like, but he is harsh. He's described as harsh. I would think that she would wonder if she would be beaten for telling him that and disobeying him like that. But she was not afraid, and she did what was right because she feared God. And it's interesting also how God takes care of Abigail. Now, obviously, we don't wish that wicked husbands die. We wish that they would come to know the Lord. But in this case, he did die. And God gives Abigail a new husband who does love God. Now, David obviously makes a bunch of mistakes too. But this is a household that's protected by God because he is serving God. What a change for her to go from being married to that guy to then being a part of his house. Abigail's story should be a great encouragement to all of us, but particularly to those who are in difficult situations. There are a couple of things to remember when you are in one of those situations. First, these circumstances require much wisdom. Generally, you should go past your husband to the appropriate authority, governmental or elders, in the following types of situations: uncontrolled anger, abdication of his responsibility to provide for the family, and on that one, I don't just mean he's not making enough money so that you can have all the cool toys that you want or the nice clothes that you think that you need, but that he's actually not providing for your basic family needs of shelter and food, tax evasion, physical abuse, sexual unfaithfulness, violence. This is not an exhaustive list, but it gives you an idea of the seriousness we're talking about. These are not just minor everyday sins, but they're stiff-necked, unrepentant, blatant sins. If you're not sure what to do, there's one thing that you shouldn't do. Do not gossip about your husband to your friends, even under a spiritual guise. This is always an unacceptable plan of attack when you're in one of these situations. You don't want to make it worse by going and gossiping. Something that you can do is to seek the counsel of your elders. If this is a delicate situation that you're embarrassed by, it may be appropriate to ask your WOW leader or someone like that to come along with you so that you're not quite as uncomfortable. Another thing that's important is to remember that there is comfort and hope. In 1 Peter 3, verses 1 and 2, we are given the hope of being the tool that God uses to bring our husbands to repentance through our respectful and pure conduct without a word. Respect is not weak. This goes back to making sure that we understand what respect really is, having the proper definition. Otherwise, it gets all confusing here in these difficult situations if you don't remember what respect really is and that it's not something weak, but it's something active that God uses powerfully. Another Nancy Wilson quote that I love is, "A faithful Christian woman can make the circumstances she is in much better by being obedient. A disobedient wife, on the other hand, can always make things worse." Earlier in 1 Peter 2, verses 18 to 21, let's go there and look at that. "Servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. For this is a gracious thing. When mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly. For what credit is it when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you might follow in his steps." We're told in this verse that people submitting to unjust masters, which would be a wife in a situation like this, we are not forgotten by God, and he will not leave you. That should be all the encouragement that you need in a situation like that. I just want to end by reading the Nancy Wilson quote one more time that we've already read. "Where would the church be today if the men in it were properly respected?" Not only this, but I also wonder, where would we be as Christian women if we were properly respecting? I can only imagine the increase in contentment, joy, and fruitfulness in our lives.